Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 227. I'm Corey, here with Daryl.
Yo.
And John is back with us.
Yo, yo, Big Red in the house.
Big Red. John is one of the OG members all the way back to, I don't know, when the hell did we start doing this? 4 or 5 years ago?
Episodes or something? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
All the way back to episode one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are on 227. Did I hear that right?
Yes, 227.
Yeah.
227. And we are talking magic still. We're still talking about magic. And magic continues to release cards at the blistering rate that is making us feel tired and old because we can't even release podcasts to keep up with it fast enough. And here we are. We last podcast like, what, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. We missed last week. Yeah. So here's our makeup episode. But since then, like, we haven't even talked about the Midnight Hunt, which is crazy to think.
Yeah, there was no picks. There was no picks game. Like, we didn't even talk about a single spoiler. Like, it just blew right by us.
Yeah. So, John, I know you're psyched about the Midnight Hunt.
Oh, yeah, man. It kind of snuck up on me, too. I was like, you know, I had kind of, like, quit Magic 2 years ago, kind of when the tournament scene was, you know, getting a little wonky with all the changes with Wizards and things. And then, you know, we're all trapped in this COVID thing. And I'm like, I'm kind of curious, like, what's going on with cards now? So I went to the AFR pre-release. Yeah. And then I saw Midnight Hunt was coming up. And I was like, oh, man, everything that's popping up on my Facebook looks insane. And so I ended up going to the, like, two of the Friday night pre-releases here for it. And, yeah, the Limited is fantastic. And just playing it on Arena, too.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we'll definitely get into Midnight Hunt today. We're also going to talk a little bit about some spicy modern red list, because for those of you who aren't familiar, John is a red mage, like, to the point where his email address is Red Deck Winnie. and the host of the Red Deck podcast. Is that still going?
We didn't keep it going, but it did have a good long run, and we had our 2,000 listeners a month there for a while.
All so right, it, man.
Was, it was running hot, pun intended.
Well, I've been noticing kind of a little uptick in red decks in modern lately, so I think there's some interest in the topic. I'd have to say, but there's you know, it kind of it waxes and wanes, doesn't it? It's like red decks are here to stay; they're never going anywhere, and they'll always as soon as they're forgotten, they become powerful again.
So, no, definitely true. Yeah. And I think the nice thing too is it's like the red cards that you have access to now are so powerful that, you know, it feels like it's a pretty regular deck, just like any other one in the meta these days.
Yeah. But before we get to any of that stuff, sorry, Daryl, go ahead.
Go ahead. Get the shilling out of the way.
All right. Before we get to any of that stuff, we have to introduce our sponsor. I have to shill ManaTraders.com. ManaTraders.com. Speaking of, we were just off the cast talking about how incredibly expensive Magic was and how the reserve list is here to stay, etc., etc., etc. You know, reserve list isn't really a big problem on MTGO. And thanks to our sponsor, ManaTraders.com, use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 40% off your first 3 months. You can have like a Taiga for like $2-3, right? It's pretty cheap. I haven't looked recently, but man, dual lands maybe $200-$300 in paper, more, I'm sure.
I'm more, much more.
But
you can get dual lands on Moto for only $2 to $3.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Some yeah, they are really they're not particularly expensive. Like, let me pop over to Legacy here real quick and just grab a random lands deck here or Snow Miracles.
Yeah. So
your dual lands are Savannah 2 tickets, Tropical Island 13 tickets. Tundra 3 tickets. So yeah, you're looking at $13 for the high on that.
So plenty of legacy decks that fit well within the confines of your rental limits, depending on the different plans that you pick. And those that aren't familiar with the ManaTraders.com system, you kind of pay for what you want to use. So, you know, you can kind of scan the decks that you're interested in. And honestly, MTG Goldfish does a fantastic job of like kind of giving the price range of those cards, because you can literally click on the MTGO button and like see what they cost, and then go straight to like you know, the card hoarder total will give you an estimate, and then that'll kind of put you in an idea of, you know, what you need to subscribe to. But ManaTraders.com certainly beats the hell out of coughing up that $800 or whatever it might be for the digital objects.
Yeah, that $340 for your four Ragavans when you could pay $36 for your four Volcanic Islands, you know.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah,
yeah, Ragavan. Mana Traders is a fantastic site. It's good that they're a sponsor for you guys. I used to use that all the time every month when I was grinding PTQs and GPs.
Yeah, man. You got to, really. It's the best way to train.
It is.
So we're going to get reacquainted with John, and you know, I think we're all going to play this game because we're going to have a little bit of fun here. So I got MTG Table Talk topics, and these are like, okay, so we sit down at a table with a bunch of strangers, and I wouldn't say we're strangers to each other, but you may be interested in knowing a little bit more about the people behind the mics. And say, you know, you ask someone a question to break the ice, and these questions are asked of Magic players. So, of course, the conversation circles around our favorite card games. So here are the questions. I'm going to ask you a few things here, and John, I'm going to start with you. Contestant number one. You can only play one format for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Ooh, all right. I'm already liking these questions. This, oh, man.
That's hard.
That is hard. I mean, I love all the things Magic. But as someone who's played since pretty much the beginning and played almost every format, except for the historic one you mentioned before the podcast, I would say it looks fun. Yeah, I would have to probably say Modern because, I mean, obviously it's very popular right now, but it's always been my best tournament format. And I think one of the reasons it's popular is because, one, it's, you know, obviously still a not really a rotating format, and you get access to a lot of the stuff that you'd have in Legacy without it being quite as busted as Legacy gets. And I say that as I know Daryl's in this camp too. We're both big Legacy fans, but Modern's a little bit more fair.
I would agree with that.
Daryl? Yeah?
Modern? I'm actually going to agree with John and say Modern. I love Legacy. It was my soup du jour, but they've taken away my favorite toy. But really, like, as far as, like, if we assume cost is an option or anything like that, like, there's so many different toys you get to play with in Legacy or Modern that you're like, I would like to play with that in Legacy, and you try it, and it's just, like, one step below good enough, so you just kind of have to accept that, like, this is where you're at, like, these are the things you get to do. Plus the fact that they actually do bring things off of the ban list in Modern with some frequency, as well as putting them on. That's going to happen more often in Modern than it is going to in Legacy. So, like, it gives you the ability to have this format continue to stay fresh and have things like that happen. So I'm actually going to pick Modern too.
Yeah, I think I'd have to say the same. It's a loaded question, though, because, you know, like, the accessibility of the cards is a big factor, and, like, the availability of, yeah, like, being able to play the format. You can't do it on Arena. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're stuck with Modern, then, like, you know, you're limited to, like, playing on Moto or playing in the shops, and that's hard to do these days. But if, yeah, you know, all of that, like, out of the picture, out of the question, it's like Modern's the most fun. And I think that's kind of
I think it's only a matter of time too before Modern shows up on Arena. I mean, I know part of it is probably the money engine that the Wizards wants there, but it's so popular and it's just become more popular over the years that, you know, I gotta imagine that's the next move.
I hope you're right, but I don't know. I mean, Historic feels like it's kind of the replacement for it right now. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Contestant number one. You're paired up against an opponent who you know is playing a control deck with Nephalia Drownyard as its only win condition. How do you react? For those that aren't familiar, Nephalia Drownyard is a land that taps to mill an opponent for, what, two cards?
I think it's three. Three? Yeah, I'm pulling it up to remind myself.
One blue black for three cards.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I remember going to a tournament in Chicago with Daryl where you drew a seven-card hand, and I want to say this card was a part of that deck and that you still got there.
Oh, it was entirely the only way the deck won. The deck had a Tameo, an Elixir, Immortality. But it was just like some Nephalia Drownyards and some lands and some counterspells. Yeah, I kept a seven-land hand against like a Jeskai mid-rangey sort of deck with like Restoration Angel, Snapcaster Mage. Just drown him out.
That tournament's just still one of my best memories because one, it involved Daryl and I going to Chicago Deep Dish Pizza and just crushing that restaurant full of pizza, and then staying up till 1 a.m. in the morning while everybody else fell asleep playtesting to make sure our decks were good. And then we both started out 5-0 the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, it was solid.
Corey, answer your question. Drone Yard deck, I'm playing against this. I know it's the only win con. And what was the question for it?
How do you react? But keep in mind, Drone Yard is just like the placeholder for any kind of like just dirtily control deck that just has packed all answers and very few, you know, proactive strategies.
Yeah, how do I feel about it?
Yeah, how do you like that?
Actually, I really enjoy playing against those decks because that's kind of like the antithesis of the style of play that I play. So, you know, that's kind of like mano y mano. That's your arch enemy that you got to face off against.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just buckle my seatbelt and settle in for like 75 minutes of fun and fantasticness.
Make sure you take
a poop for 5 minutes.
Make sure you take a poop first.
Yeah. Call a judge, go to the bathroom. Make sure you get your time extensions where you can.
Yep.
I mean, those matchups How do you are, feel? Especially like Daryl, you and I play tested this style matchup against each other that tournament. And it's like, those are great because it really comes down to one person's critical decision. You know, when somebody taps out and plays the wrong spell, I mean, it really comes down to like tempo mistakes and, you know, just high level play.
Yeah. And it's actually both sides. So like a lot of times you would think in a matchup like that, it's all about the control deck making the wrong decision. But it's also about the sequencing from an aggressive deck. If they sequence the wrong things in the wrong order, you get an extra card or two from a Supreme Verdict, or you get to time walk them with a cheap counterspell. Like you get to free roll a tapped land and get a counterspell off of it, so you don't take 2 damage or something like that. Those are the sorts of places where the control deck can also pick up incremental advantage, where both sides have to play very well to kind of end up with the expected result that the red deck can try and eke out the last few points over the course of the game.
Yeah.
But yeah. What about you, Corey? Do you feel abysmal? Well, I think you're an abysmal kind of guy. You don't like
it. No. I'm not. I play those kinds of decks. I mean, I don't play them that are as obviously like reactive slanted as like the Drown Yard decks, but I play control decks all the time, and I get the eye rolls from my opponents, and I don't feel bad about them. But it's the like matchups where it's the mirrors.
Mid-range, right?
What's that?
Wasn't your preference back in the day kind of more mid-range, Corey, or am I mistaken?
Yeah,
no,
you're right. I play a lot of green, like, mid-rangey decks, and, like, I was playing a lot of Coco and, like, Birthing Pod and stuff back in the day, but I think, like, as I've, you know, I've played more modern, I think I've gotten more into, like, blue, like, Snapcaster-type decks, and when I go to the shops, that's what I'll do. I'll bring a different blue deck every week, so I've kind of developed that that reputation, and you know,
now the question to piggyback off that real quick is, do these decks classify as in the similar vein of that deck, stuff like KCI? Well, obviously that's combo and not control, but again, kind of dirtily annoying, one-sided, you know, your opponent doing his thing, or is that a separate category you guys feel like?
No, that's the next question.
This is a separate category.
This is like all removal, all counter spells. Like you don't get to do anything with your spells, right? So then the next question is like, you're paired up against an opponent who plays turn 1 Allosaurus Rider. How do you react? You know, like your opponent's deck is just purely combo, and it's just the combo that they just play solitaire and like hope they find the things that they need.
We have lunch break.
Yeah, I wait until they get a couple of sequences into what they're doing, and then I just start shuffling my cards and kill all their joy, and then go again.
I like that. Kill all their joy.
Yeah, that one, if you don't have the right interaction, you just happen to get your rarefied lunch break with your Blue X control decks. So, like, you know, either I'm here to win or I'm here for a lunch break, man. Like, either way, I'm totally good with it.
Yeah, I take great.
I've been known.
Take great pride in playing main deck Spell Pierce and things like that for these types of matchups. So this is my favorite. This is my wheelhouse.
I mean, I've definitely suited up these decks before. Not the Allosaurus Rider version, but like the more fiddly, like KCI egg style decks. Like I've been known to suit those kind of decks up. Bomberman, that sort of stuff. So like I'm not opposed to a good fiddly deck either. So yeah.
All right, I'll do
this. Is reminding me of I was playing in a Legacy GP in Louisville at one point, and I'm playing the last round of day 1, and I'm playing against Belcher. And this guy does 2 day zero or two turn zero kills in a row. And I'm just like, I didn't get to play any magic cards. This is interesting. And then thankfully he was a really nice dude and was like, you know, I don't really want to grind out day two. I'm just going to go draft. So if you want the win, I'll scoop to you.
Nice.
All right.
Solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to skip this next one. Let's go to this. This is a really important question, pressing question. Contestant number one, John, why is blue the best color?
All right. I'm signing off the podcast.
See ya.
Yeah. Daryl. Oh, everybody likes to draw cards. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair,
you get Psionic Blast, John.
I do.
Yeah.
I do like being the enemy sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, everything has its own advantages, but they messed up and printed some really busted blue cards. So blue is just kind of like de facto actually the color with like the most powerful cards per capita most of the time. But like, it's not the best color. It does not lead to a happy play pattern for most people. So
it's the most fun.
It's the strongest
color. That's my answer. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's de facto the best color because they printed like unreasonable cards for it for a long time. And they were just like, oh, people aren't happy about this. Maybe we should stop doing that.
Yeah. All right. Last question. John, do you go the extra mile to treat your deck right? Foil treatments, promo, double sleeving, triple sleeving?
No, man, I grew up as a poor kid over here, so anytime I see a $5,000 deck, I kind of scoff at it. It's probably one of the reasons why I play red decks. So generally not, but I will say I do appreciate a good altar, so if I can get something savage done like that for a deck, I will.
Corey, you're the only foil man here, man. I'll take it beat the shit. As long as I can put it in a sleeve and not have a judge complain about it, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've bought my fair share of beat up cards. I have a Misty Rainforest that says Verdant Catacombs on the back of it in Sharpie. I'll buy the moderate play heavy plays if they're going to be a lot cheaper, like in the $30 to like $50 mm-hmm. range. But when they're like cheap cards that I can get like the promo version of it for like, you know, 25 cents to a dollar more, usually I like, you know, I'll splurge.
You like the shinies.
I will like try to do that too. I'm not usually big on foils, but if there's like all the new extended art stuff in the showcase, I dig some of that.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna cough up like $25 for like alternate art of a card I already have. Like that's where I draw the line. If it's easy to do, I'll do it.
Yep.
All right, that's all I got for that. We can move on. I thought that would be fun. So anyways,
I like that segment. That's good.
Let's do some Midnight Hunt, man. So John, you've played a little bit of the limited. I've played a bit of the limited on Arena, not a ton, but I'm getting into the standard. And I think like first question for you is this: in Daryl, have you played the limited? I know you don't have Arena,
no limited,
or any of the Midnight Hunt. Probably tested it, maybe a little in modern, yeah.
Yeah, a little modern testing with some Wilderness Reclamation nonsense.
Okay.
All
right. Well, I guess my question for everybody is this: is first of all, like the thing that I figured we probably once we start diving into this is we're gonna overlook this. What do you guys think about the theme? Like the whole return to Innistrad and like the Gothic horror thing. Like, is that speaking to you?
It's a good backdrop to me. Yeah. Like, go ahead, John. You probably have more say. You like these sorts of things more than I do.
Well, I think that they did a good job with one. I mean, Innistrad is always kind of regarded as the most popular draft format of all time. I mean, obviously everybody has their top fives in their lists, but it's consistently ranked up there as number one or two. And I think they got all the elements from that right, all the flashback, repeatability kind of, you know, features and themes. And then they added, you know, ones that were great that were along those same veins, like the God, I always blank on the name of it, but the one that can basically flashback creatures and,
Disturb.
Know, yeah. And I think that's like what, if you play limited a lot, I think the big things you're looking for is, you know, you want involved long games that have, you know, a lot of different abilities and a lot of different interactive features that you and your opponent can have. And I think this nails it for sure. And, you know, even wise power level, you know, it feels like I haven't played, you know, 20 drafts, 30 drafts or whatever, but it feels like all the colors have a fighting chance.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with the mechanics being like spot on in terms of the theme. And I think you bring up a good point. Like, they've done a good job of like bringing back like the feel of the mechanics from Innistrad and like just kind of evolving on them, where it's like the set is returned. It feels fresh, but it still has echoes of like the nostalgia from the first one. And it's like Disturb is the name of the like flashback creature thing, right?
Yeah, Disturb.
Yeah. Okay. Disturb. And then the new take on like the werewolf thing, I think it's a much better look at the day and night thing for werewolves. It's cool that like they can come into play and be transformed into a werewolf because it is night already. You know, like I don't think that was something that could happen with the original mechanic.
No. I mean, the one problem with it is though that I agree with you that it's nice that they did a refresh on it, but it was initially pretty confusing. Like, I mean, I got it. I got the gist of it. It didn't take that long, but for like any new player or even players that haven't played for a little while, like, man, it wasn't explained or laid out the best. Like even LSV and Marshall were getting really confused on the podcast they do talking about it.
Well, the card that represents day and night explains it pretty well. It's written right on it.
Are you talking about the Celestis or whatever, the artifact?
I'm talking about the day and night. Is that what you're referring to?
Oh, or like the token cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's a little goofiness with it. I've made mistakes on Arena plenty of times. I'm getting confused between the werewolves and the cards that transform for other reasons.
Yeah.
And then there's guys that like put day and night into effect and then don't transform. Like they just have stuff that happens when it becomes night, which I think is cool. It's cool that they interact with those mechanics in different ways. Cause like, you know, you can all think back to like the age of like Kamigawa and other sets like that, where there were limited sets that relied on the other sets in the block to like really, you know, to really make use of the keyword mechanics that were specific to that set. And it just felt like there wasn't like enough play between them. So you had to like really draft aggressively to like get like the, you know, the soul shift thing going or whatever it was for spirits, you know? And I feel like there's just enough where it's like, these mechanics are like specific in that you could build a werewolf deck, but you could also just have werewolves in your deck and they're good. And then they also kind of interact with other cards that do stuff with day and night. So it's a little more versatile.
Yeah, I think that was a big thing that a lot of players and I noticed at the pre-release was that there was so many abilities caked into so many of the cards that, like you said, you didn't have to string together a lot of different themes or really aggressively pursue some. Like you just had to have a lot of cards that made noise that essentially, you know, had one or two extra features, ETBs or their different abilities. And, you know, 80% of the cards, it seems like, had some relevancy there. But, Daryl, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I kind of cut you off before, man. What do you think about this?
I think the backdrop-wise, they did pretty well to kind of hold solid to the original Innistrad as far as, like, flavor is concerned. And, like, bringing back the Werewolf Day Night flipping thing. Like from that perspective, they did very well on kind of maintaining that. They kept the underrunning 13 thing from Triskaidekaphobia to Triskaidekaphile, just little like small callbacks like that to make me go, yeah, I'm good with this. They got it right.
Yeah, for sure. And like just the like playing on the graveyard is just cool. Like there's like just like some minor things that interact with the graveyard in ways that like apply to like the previous sets that were released, including like Jumpstart and like the release of like some of the Surveil stuff. Like,
yeah.
Consider's the name of the upgraded Ponder, right? The one mana blue. Yeah, Consider.
The upgraded Opt.
Yeah. Opt. Yeah, sorry, not Ponder. Yes, Opt.
Jesus.
I misspoke. I misspoke.
Oh my
but
God.
Yeah, that card is like, you know, it's just like in this set. I mean, obviously, as a way of like, you know, being flashy, but also because it like is thematically appropriate because it puts a card in the graveyard. But it also like works really well with Dragon's Rage Channeler, and like Historic is all over that interaction. Like that's really good. And for two mana, you can play a Dragon's Rage Channeler and then Surveil twice and then draw a card. I mean, that's freaking yep. Preordain, but better.
Yeah,
is that one of the ones from Modern Horizons there?
Dragon's Rage Channeler is in. Yeah.
Oh, the red card you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those cards are all pretty pushed.
Jumpstart Historic. Yeah, so, I mean, like, even though those two sets, like, have almost nothing to do with each other, like, they are released in close proximity, and, like, there's, you know, there's some synergies there. There's not a whole lot. There's not a whole lot coming from Innistrad that's showing up in Historic, with the exception of, like, that type of stuff, like the Consider I'm seeing, and
I can't even think of a whole lot else. This might give a little bit more play to that kind of style in Historic, too, because, like you said, they did do a good job with spotting the same themes and making them relevant. So, you know, I'm curious if, okay, now we have enough threshold of spirits or vampires that, you know, in Historic, maybe you get that shift where now it sees more play. And, you know, I think they did really do a good job of like hammering home the same themes, vampires and werewolves and all of that.
That's true. I do wonder if vampires shows up a little more, because vampires was kind of a fringe deck in Historic prior. And there's been some pretty good adds. Zombies is another one. You've got the Curse Champion of the Parish zombie guy. I can't remember his name, but they're Champion of the Perished. Oh yeah, how did I screw that up?
I could see it too, because zombies and werewolves, I see both of those archetypes in Standard online a ton when I'm grinding Arena. So, and the vampires deck seems, or not the vampires, but the demon. God, can't even talk. The zombies deck seems completely legit.
Yeah.
Trying to remember what it is, but they've got like, you've got the black, like one-sided wrath where you choose like a creature type and all other creatures die. And then you've got like tons of ways to kind of recur zombies or get decay tokens.
Yeah. So anyways, I don't want to go too much into Historic. We've talked about quite a bit about it in previous casts, but what's this looking like in Standard? I know it's like, this was a big rotation for Standard. So this meta that was previously very settled is like super shaken up now and looking very green. John, I know you've had some experience with that. Have you played quite a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing a lot recently, not so much the last 2 weeks, but I was playing a good amount just ramping up to that. And I mean, kind of the two decks I just mentioned, the zombies and the werewolves, you see those a lot more online. I'm not at like the platinum mythic level, but I'm getting close. So that might change once that I shift into that area. But you see the influence of it. I'm looking at MTG Goldfish too at some of the top archetypes right now, and I see werewolves is up in the top eight there. The other thing that like, you know, and I see one of the top decks listed here is it dragons or is it control? And I do see expressive iteration decks online quite a bit. That's a really sweet card. Daryl, that kind of feels like a card up your alley too, man.
Yeah, it is. That card is very nice. Like you basically, it's basically two mana. It almost feels like, to me, it almost feels like Explore. Like you get to draw a free card and you hit your land drop. Like it's almost trying to guarantee those two things. Because like realistically, you're going to play it not on turn two, you're going to play it before you hit your land drop, you're going to get your free land, you're going to put the best card of the other two in your hand, and you're going to get to like either bin some stuff to the bottom that you're not going to use, or just like be kind of sad that like you saw two impressive cards and couldn't take them both. Or if you don't need a land, you can take the cheap one and put it in exile. Like if you get like a Prismatic Ending or something similar, or whatever, the one drop removal or Consider or something like that. Like, you just put that in exile, play your land, play the thing, and then, like, get the best card out of the other ones. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of space there to make a lot of free tempo and card advantage out of that card.
This is it. Dragon's control deck is one that I looked at building in. Like, Goldspan Dragon seems like the gold standard, no pun intended. Yes, pun intended, maybe? I don't know. Of, like, red creatures in, like, these types of, like, mid-range and, like, control decks. And I think this guy, like, this guy's here to stay. Like, probably, like, just about the best thing you could be doing, like, in the mid-range for red. But, like, now there's, like, support for, like, this kind of dragon theme with, like, we had Dragon's Fire added in the Forgotten Realms set. Now we've got Smoldering Egg in addition to that. So we've got eight, like, playable dragons. And there's still more that aren't even included in this deck. So, like, I'm wondering, there's probably, like a more, like, dedicated dragon-themed deck. I don't know if it's better than this Izzet deck. But this one, you know, This one might just like have enough. This is pretty cool. It's like Smoldering Eggs, Goldspan Dragons, a bunch of burn spells. Dragon's Fire is basically like what's the equivalent of that in Modern? Do you guys know what I'm talking about? It's like 3 damage to a creature.
Yeah, it's Draconic Roar, I think.
Thank you. Draconic Roar, yeah. Yeah, it's like
a Draconic Roar. You got Inferno of the Star Mounds. You got another dragon out of the board here.
Oh, right.
I really like that. You were talking about, you mentioned the star of the show here, Smoldering Egg, man. That card is awesome, dude. I looked at that at first and I was like, I don't think this is going to be another thing in the ice. But now that I've seen it in play and standard, that thing is powerful and it flips pretty easy.
Yeah. 2 damage to any target is pretty insane. Smoldering Egg, it looks like one of those cards that like on its face is like, this appears to be one of those like bulk rares. And then you kind of like get thinking about it and like, okay, cast an instant or sorcery, put a number of Ember Counters on it equal to the amount of mana spent on it. That adds up pretty fast. To flip a 2-mana 0/4 defender into a 4/4 that has this triggered ability, that's pretty much all you can ask. That is very non-zero. This guy like defends really well in the early game. There's all these aggressive white decks that are just like going to be attacking you to death if you don't have something like this to, you know, to stave off the assault. And then this guy like also goes way long with this Ashmoth Dragon side too.
Yeah, I think like, and there's something for your listeners too, I think that you know, this could be a potentially a decent spec buy too. The card is pretty cheap right now. I think you can pick them up for like $1 or $1.50, something like that. And like, if you're going to play this card, like one, you could play it in Commander and it'd be a lot of fun there. So you'll get your singleton for that. If you're going to play it in any tournament, you're probably playing a play set of them. And I'm assuming there's like showcase or extended art versions of it too. So, you know, you could get the kind of sweet printing or the foil sweet printing of it. But the card is pretty nuts. So 2 damage is a lot when it flips, and just like the easeability of it flipping is definitely there.
Is there any hope for this in Modern, you think?
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, you've got Thing in the Ice already, which is probably the one, you know, caveat, like does this see play in addition to that or in different decks, or, you know, what's it doing? But, I would imagine that this crosses over a little bit.
I think that the difference is that the Modern spells are like all 1 and 2 mana. So it's a little hard.
Yeah, Daryl, what do you think about it?
Total up.
Yeah, let me look at the front side. Let me look at the actual card. What is it called? Smoldering Egg,
yeah. So whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you put a number of Ember Counters equal to that.
Seven or more.
Yeah.
7 or more, I think, is too many. I don't think it's going
to be 7 or more in Modern. 7 or more, but casting cost of the spell. Remember, it's different.
Right,
than
but, right.
Ice,
that's so. That's what I'm saying. But like, yeah. Realistically, in Modern, most of your playable spells top out at 2 mana. So like, in your best case scenario, you're still casting 4 spells. So is 4/4 Flying Gutter Snipe better than 7/8 Wrath?
You got a point. I mean, my answer to that is no.
There might be a way to trick it out though. So fire and ice. If you cast fire, does that count
as
4?
2 mana.
2 mana.
No, okay. It counts as 2 because it counts the CMC of the actual spell in the stack. So like, okay. the you're looking at like, this probably is getting played in the deck with like a bunch of bolts and like stuff like that. Expressive Iteration is probably, and Counterspell are probably the top end. Maybe you get a Force Negation in there for 3 CMC.
Okay.
But like, That's probably it. So you're probably casting 4 spells to flip this thing.
All right.
So at that point, would you rather just have Thing in the Ice?
Yeah, I think it's different in this deck. I mean, like these standard control decks are like foretelling, like Behold the Multiverse and like Alrun's Epiphany and stuff. So flipping this guy is a much different story. All right.
Absolutely.
The other thing too, and it's in this deck, but also just across standard, that I think has really improved the format a bit for anybody who's starting to come back into cards or starting to play again, is the Manlands from AFR. I mean, they are all phenomenal, and they're a lot of fun to play and give the deck an extra dimension.
Yeah,
really those are also seeing a lot of play in Modern. Just because of the fact that they come into play untapped early is so good for Modern decks. Like, even some control decks are playing like all the Storm Giants because it's such a hard card to kill, because mana and Modern for non-control decks is a premium. So like you have to have like Fatal Push, which is kind of non-existent in this format, and Path to Exile has even gone the way of the Dodo, more for things like Prismatic Ending, which even if you have Teferi to make it an instant, you can't target the land. So like it's going to cost you two cards usually, or a couple mana and two cards, plus an extra three mana. It's just so hard to kill Hall of the Storm Giants, and it doesn't die on Holy Heat. So like six is a number that doesn't kill Hall of the Storm Giants. Like that's the one I've seen the most of in Modern right now. But like, yeah, these things are just insanely good.
Big fan of Hive of the Eye Tyrant. Any non-basic that can cast a Thoughtseize on turn one or an Inquisition on turn one without damaging you is a plus.
Yeah, absolutely.
And exiling a card from a graveyard, always relevant.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that card's got a lot of relevant text. Menace, too. So, all right. So, yeah, just looking at Standard right now, like, top, like, eight or so decks, like, the Izzet Control deck is up there. There's, like, a bunch of variations of green aggro. Most of them have some Ren and Seven stuff going on. There's, like, Gruul and Jund versions. There's Gruul Werewolves. There are some ramp decks, like Selesnya ramp decks. There are these black snow mid-range decks with Lolth, the Spider Queen, that are pretty cool. I actually put one of these together, had some fun with that. Just puts out a whole bunch of little creatures that are basically sacrifice fodder to, you know, power up your Lolth and fuel Deadly Disputes and things like that. The mono white aggro decks are pretty abundant. They're just tons of little white weenies powered by Intrepid Adversary and Luminarch Aspirant. And let's see, there is a Vampires deck, and of course there's like Azorius Control too. There always is, right?
yeah, so, there will be.
So see, that's seems pretty healthy.
Yeah, that Intrepid Adversary, I had him in the pre-release, and man, Game Ender every time. That card's powerful.
Yeah, guy's got Lifelink. That's crazy. I mean, 2 for a 3/1 Lifelink is good. With major upside of just being like Crusade for your team.
So. The other card I've seen a lot too here is, not to get too much off on the tangent of Standard, but in a lot of those green decks, the non-ramp ones, that Werewolf Pack Leader is pretty excellent. I mean, it's just a great rate, and he snowballs out of control pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy is nuts. That might be, if those green stompy decks show up in Modern again, I mean, this guy obviously is a consideration for those. It's like 2 mana for a 3/3 with upside. I think you ought to take a look at that if you're building those. I don't know if those decks really like are viable anymore, but they always seem to show up at tournaments, and I'm always caught off guard by someone playing mono green Rancor decks. So.
Yeah.
All right. So anyways, that's Standard. Any other thoughts on Standard and Wild Hunt and such before we move on?
I'm good. I'm good too, I think.
All right. What the heck is this Monkey Shine list?
Oh, yeah. You got to occasionally take a break from the tournament play and play some sweet, sweet Commander. And a couple of years ago, I had a pretty awesome old school style red deck, and I wanted to start rebuilding it. And during the process, I started kind of putting together a ranking system for my Commander cards. A lot of it was based off of whether they could draw cards, had repeatability, lower casting costs, affected each opponent, and created mana or game-changing effects. So I went through and I rated a ton of the red cards, and based off of the system that I made, I kind of came up with this Ragavan deck. And so a lot of the cards you'll see, I'm one that's creature heavy just because I like playing with creatures, but also almost all the cards have some kind of built-in mechanic or something that they can keep doing on their own, the army in a can theory, so to speak.
Yeah, this looks fun. I hear you like drawing cards, though, John. You don't need to play red to do that, you know, right?
Right, right. But I got to also punish my opponent. So you'll see there's plenty of mana barbs and what's...
Pyrostatic Pillar.
There's some nonsense in here.
Yeah.
I sat down for the first game with this deck, and we were playing a 4-player EDH, and the guy across the way starts talking about his infinite combo like 30 seconds into the game. We're all like, oh, God. But then he sees Pyrostatic Pillar, and he had never seen the card before. And he's like, well, I think I'm just going to scoop up my cards and leave now. Like, All right, man, you do you.
Yeah,
that's just good. That's just good deck design right there. Can't ever beat an enchantment.
Yep.
Yep.
Some of the best decks, or some of the most fun I've had playing EDH, is with a mono red deck. And like, believe it or not, like I always play blue decks and green decks in Commander because you just need like that ability to like draw cards in order to like stay relevant in like 3-hour games of Magic. But
yeah,
sometimes red decks can just be so creative in the way that they like leverage artifacts and like just some of the like really. There's very unique approaches to that in red because they have to, you know, kind of sidestep the like draw a card because they're not allowed to do that for some reason.
Yeah, you have all these ways of like incremental card advantage, like you're saying, and I think a lot of the exile cards are a big factor whenever I build these decks because you can find ways to really abuse some of those factors, multiple exiles, a turn, stuff like Experimental Frenzy. And I got to give a little shout out here, too, on that same note. One of our old podcast listeners and a friend here from the area hooked me up with a Ragavan. We did a little card trade, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm scrolling through the cards. All of a sudden, there's a monkey in there. And I'm like, I mean, obviously, amazing move. And shout out to Kirk Medford. Appreciate it. Awesome to get Ragavan, but also enable this deck to exist. Nice. And my God, that card is ridiculous, man.
Yeah, card is crazy.
Yeah, like I'm gonna be honest. I sit down to play a game of Commander, and I look around the table and I see Ragavan as the commander for someone, and I just want to kill that person first. Because what I know is gonna happen is they're gonna play it on turn one. They're gonna get 2 or 3 hits in with it. I typically play a commander deck with no creatures, so they're going to hit me like a billion times and steal all my stuff. And like, I just want that person to not be in the game.
Well, rather than going through all 100 cards included in this commander list on the podcast, I will just post the link in the show notes. So if you're curious about it, you can find it there. And you should be, because it's really cool. Like I said, some of the best fun in Commander can be had with the challenge of like, you know, trying to overcome the color pie limitations, and mono red certainly has those. So this is cool.
Yeah, they do.
All right.
So yeah, take a peek at the list and get your Dockside Extortionist and your Sensei's Tops in there as well.
Oh yeah. You might have to, you know, budget concerns in mind. You might have to do something else for those guys, but.
I was going to say, you might have to cut an arm off to buy those at this point.
Yeah, you can maybe give a kidney or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of mono red, this modern deck that you shared looks really spicy. And John sent a link. He's like, I want to talk about this list that I'm interested in taking to the GP. And it says Hammer Time in parentheses. I was like, oh, everyone knows that list. That's like the most popular deck in modern. And here I click on the link. And Hammer refers to Hammer of Begarden. But... not the hammer that you're thinking of. So yeah, tell us about this. Yeah, this is not a mono white deck. It is a mono red deck playing Hammer of Begarden. So I think you're gonna have to read that card, John, because it's been probably 15 years since anyone has.
So this list came about because my old podcast partner Davis is actually the one going to Grand Prix Vegas, and he's thinking about playing something along these lines. But this list has been getting a little heat in modern. It's got 4 Hammer of Begarden in it, which is an old school Magic card from Mirage, for those that are not familiar. 3 mana for 3 damage to target creature or player, but during your upkeep, you can pay 5 and bring it back to your hand. And for those that weren't around in the early days of Magic, this was a $20 rare back when it first came out. This was back when $20 was the equivalent of the $100 or $200 rare. And it was a playset in every red deck, and it won one of the world championships at the time. So this card was, you know, right up there with Shivan Dragon and Lightning Bolt and all the big red cards, and still one of my favorite red cards of all time. But never saw any play in Modern for the longest time because, you know, it is a little overcosted, and, you know, you really have to have a deck that can play like a Blood Moon or a control-ish feature where you have time to get this engine going. And this deck has been getting some results online. I think it just 6-0'd or 5-0'd the other day in a tournament, and it's got all the control-y elements that you'd want. It's got Fury, the new Flametongue Kavu with double strike. You got your Bone Crusher Giants, your Ragavans. And kind of one of the things that I think is one of my favorite features is the new cards are these lands that double as spells. Spikefield Hazard, and there's the Valakut. I can't remember the last part of it. Exploration, I want to say. A lot of those cards are showing up in these lists, too, to give you a little bit more dimension.
Are you talking about the Wheel of Fortune one?
The Wheel of Fortune, Awakening, yeah. You'll see that in some of these lists. And then all of the lists pretty much are playing Blast Zone, which is a card I haven't seen in a while either, which is a colorless land that you can put charge counters on and then destroy permanents equal to the charge counter.
Yeah, so I wanted to just add Hammer of Bagarden. It says, does 3 damage to target creature or player printed on the card, but it is errata to any target, so it can hit a planeswalker too. And you may have mentioned it. This deck has Obosh, the Prey Piercer, in the sideboard, so that obviously becomes a little more potent for 3 mana, dealing 6 damage for 3. A little bit more palatable, but overall, if you've got your opponent in a lock with a Blood Moon, and it's like, okay, what are we doing? We're just staring each other down. Just having access to something to just, like, nug them for 3 over and over again, you got a way to win the game. But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad card. It, like the whole concept of just like having these pivots into lands, like with these Spikefield Hazards, and then like having Ragavan, which can also ramp you in a way. You've got ways to recur this. You've got moments where it's like, I just need that 3 more damage. So even if you're not just like looping this hammer, like for, you know, 15, 20 minutes on your opponent, you might just need that last 3 damage to get in there. So you activate this one time from your graveyard to finish them off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can be a finisher. And one of the problems for these type of decks, too, is that they usually didn't have a good enough engine to either get started or keep going. And this one has stuff like Seasoned Pyromancer, Bone Crusher Giant, Hammer, so that you can keep kind of continually nicking at your opponent. Your opponent doesn't have like a clock time that they can just sit there and wait for you to draw your kill spell. And then you also have 4 Relics main deck, which is pretty huge in Modern. Even though it non-bows with the hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like what I see here, just because, like, these Blood Moon decks would always just die to Flood, and you have, like, 12 cards that kind of inherently protect against Flood, with the 4 Hammers, the 4 Pyromancers, and then the 4 Bone Crusher Giants letting you spend 5 or 6 mana, plus Ragavan making treasures. It has Dash, so you can spend your mana that way to protect it from a removal spell, and then get some free cards off of that.
And Dan.
But, like... And Den of the Bugbear. Well, I'm under the assumption that you have a Blood Moon in play. So,
oh,
like,
right.
That's kind of the thing I'm working off of. But you don't always, you're correct. But just like a nice little feature that's like the first thing I saw when I looked at the deck is like, oh, I can pick up my hammer in the mid game. So if I top deck Seasoned Pyromancer, I have extra elementals that I get to, like, I get to free roll an extra elemental or whatever if I need another body in the mid game or whatever. So like that was the first thing I thought of. Or you can easily pitch these hammers to Seasoned Pyromancer, pick them back up later and go to Hammer Town if you need to.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are just small things that I look at.
Bone Crusher finds a little loophole in the awkwardness of Obosh, the Prey Piercer, with the stomp being the 2 mana spell. Like, you know, just like your curve can be a little unusual when you've got to play odd costed spells. It's not that big of a deal when you've got so many great 1 drops to include, but to have a 2 drop in there that you know is a converted mana cost 3, it's like, no, sweet. You know, I got something to do on 2 that seems like I'm not wasting a mana.
No, I do like that it fills that gap a little bit. And Obosh obviously kind of restricts your deck design a little. And that's one of the things, too, that we are actually running into trouble as we were talking about this deck. Even though I talked up Hammer a ton and we've been talking about it on the pod here, it's actually one of the cards that we've been waffling on. I mean, I think all of us Red Mages want to play it, and we know it's good for the reasons that we talked about. Mm-hmm. But whether we play like 2 of them or 4 of them, just because it is still a clunky card, even though it is effective. And we were trying to think of other options that maybe this deck would want. You guys might be able to speak more to this too.
I mean, Hammer,
I mean, are we...
4 Hammer seems like a lot. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, are we still trying to stay in like Obosh land, I guess is the question. Because if we're still trying to Obosh, like, that kind of limits us a little bit.
I think you have to. The effect is so powerful, you know, that in this style of deck too, where you're already going to be playing Blood Moon and Magus, you probably want to stay on that tangent, but yeah, it does limit your choices. You can't play stuff like Chandra Torch.
I don't hate more main deck Blood Moons. Like more main deck Blood Moons is something that, you know, catches my eye. So like moving the Magus to the main deck is always a thing you can do. So we're kind of more of a mid-range deck. So you could look at playing like one of the big dragons if that, like, if you're in the market for something like that.
How effective?
One of the.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
How effective is Blood Moon right now? It got.
Blue, I mean, it totally blanks the card Urza's Saga.
Yeah.
Like 100%. But yeah, let's take a look at the. If we take a look at the meta, I've got that open actually.
It's good. I mean, the one issue is, and you'll have this in any modern format, but even right now with the current meta, you still would run into stuff like, I was going to say this Hammer Time deck, although I'm looking at it now and it actually runs a ton of non-basics. So,
yeah.
I mean,
deck's just really fast, though.
Right. It gets underneath.
You're pretty effective against the top, like, 12 decks I'm looking at here. Like, Blue Eye Control has basics, but most of the time you have to fetch them. So it's like a late Blood Moon is no good, but like turn three Blood Moon might be good if they draw the like Mystic Gate, Hall of the Storm Giant, Hollowed Fountain part of their deck. But if they just draw like, you know, they're only on three islands, two plains. But if they draw like, you know, a bunch of fetch lands, they can play around it. But if they're just drawing like Triomes and Castles and stuff, then you're just like, well, okay, you're just going to die to this Blood Moon. Merry Christmas.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, other than that, you're staring down decks like, you know, Five Color Elementals, Blood Moon, Wall.
Yeah, have fun with that. Like
John Mintron. Yeah.
Cool.
I'm looking at this one list in the top eight here. Indomitable Creativity.
Yes. This looks
pretty saucy. Holy cow.
Now that card costs red, so you might help him.
Yeah, so yeah, if you don't know how, well, you actually just crush them because they can't Dwarven Mine and make a token. They have to, like, be able to, like, and all their sort, they don't have, like, a basic island usually because they have to have so many mountains for Dwarven Mine. So they can't play the card that, like, makes an 0-4 and a treasure. Or 0-4 and a clue. It's one of the two. I think it's 0-4 and a clue. That deck. If you're looking for a dirty combo, it's all mountains, John, so it's right up your alley.
Yeah, too many Teferis in this deck. I don't know about that.
There are a lot of Teferis in that deck. This red deck looks pretty solid. I am a questioner of Hammer of Bogarden. I looked at it, I was like, this looks like all decent modern cards, and then there's just like Hammer of Bogarden, and I'm like, well, I mean, if you need an engine, like, this is not a bad engine. Like,
by the way, just out of curiosity. I did look it up because, you know, it's obviously like the glaring, like, where, what's that doing there? It was last printed in 8th edition. Can you guys guess when 8th edition was released? What year?
Ooh, this is a good trivia question.
I actually think I know because it was the 20th year was 10th edition.
Uh-huh.
And that was 1990 or 2013. So I'm going to guess 8th edition was 2011 or 2010.
Oh, I feel like it's way before that. I'm going to go,
I'm
going to go 06.
No, it's probably before that. I think it's 03. I got the numbers mixed up.
But how'd you get to 03 from 2010?
It was the 10th anniversary was 10th edition.
Yeah.
That's what I did the math wrong. It was not the 20th. It was the 10th anniversary.
Okay.
And I remember that. Because it was in 2003. So I think it's Onslaught block 7th, 8th, 9th. So it's probably like 01 or 2000.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Good sleuthing, man.
Yeah, you're right. It is 2003. I'm impressed that you can do that. My memory for that kind of stuff is terrible. But I do have a book on the shelf behind me, this big, thick orange book that's called like the Encyclopedia of Every Magic Card Printed. And it's like you can page through it and it's got like life-size prints of all the cards, like images of all the cards. And I remember just paging through that thing. I think it went up to about 8th edition and that's as far as it got. So I probably need like three or four more printings now to catch up. But kind of cracks me up. Nice little relic yeah. of you know what Magic used to be. Things like 400 pages. All right. Nice. Well, anyways.
Sorry, I had to go attend to a running dog over here, but he's back now.
Uh-oh.
You're fine.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to stop. I'm going to put both of these lists in the show notes. You can check out both of them. Both of them have all Regven. So if you are into the monkey lifestyle, you can check them out. If you're interested, you can check them out. If you are anti-Regavan monkey, you can check them out and be prepared for the nemesis that's going to be crushing you one day while you're getting Hammer of Begardened to the dome repeatedly when you can't use your lands because they're mountains. So it's worth knowing either way. So click the link, view the deck list. John, thanks for coming on. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be back.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You guys have a great rest of your day. Adios.
Take it easy, everybody.
Take it easy.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CarnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CarnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Card Knock Life content.